Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 18, episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Sister Jacked 2, Jack in the Habit. That is courtesy of Jared Urbis, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Don't Miles Gray's in waterfalls. Please stick to the rivers and the grays that you're used to. I know that you're gonna mouse it, your gray or nothing at all.
But I think we're moving too fast.
Thank you, Emma Horner. See, that's a multi-layered AKA, and I get down with that. Any TLC references are welcome, so thank you.
Very good. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by my former co-host on the Cracked podcast, the hilarious Michael Swain.
I don't know a song that includes my name. What about that John Travolta movie, Michael?
There you go.
Or yeah, there you go.
In Swain in the Membrane.
Yeah, see, you guys are practiced at this. That's right. Much better.
No, we have to come off top all the time.
Michael Swain got no brain. I don't know.
Man, yeah.
Well, look, this interview's better over.
All right, great episode, guys. So where can we find you?
Michael, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human?
Oh, boy. I searched small egg covered in ash, what does taste like? Because also I do the Google caveman phrasing.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw that Chef's Table on Netflix about Favikin. Do you guys know Favikin?
No.
It's a 3 Michelin star restaurant in Sweden. You can't get there any way other than by like traveling overland for at least a day. And it's this super famous restaurant where the head chef Magnus Nilsson only makes stuff that I cannot imagine being good at all. So like it just fascinates me. Like a tiny egg covered in ash is one of the dishes. They just launched a new dish that's a sheep's tongue. Not sliced, like not a nice tongue deli sandwich. The whole tongue, looking like a tongue, on top of like sprigs of wood with pickled dandelions on it. Ugh. And he makes like clams cooked with wood. He uses wood a lot. There's like a bark soup.
Delicious.
Bark soup, my favorite.
And I just love getting into the learning about like chef's creations that are totally up their own asses.
Right.
Like in searching that in preparation for this, I found out there's a restaurant called Quince in San Francisco that I just found out about today that serves a meal called A Dog in Search of Gold that is a truffle, a hazelnut crisp, dusted with mushroom powder, served on an iPad.
No.
Served on an iPad.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, is something being displayed on the iPad? Is that the reason?
I couldn't get to that level of detail because, of course, they're like, you got to come.
You got to experience it, man.
Yeah, and then you'll see. I'm sure there's some proprietary app on the iPad playing. Otherwise, I'm like, did you just slap some shit together?
Right.
Yeah.
Did you see the video by that journalist who made his basement the number one restaurant on TripAdvisor?
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really great. And basically, all he did was reject people and be like, oh, sorry, we're fully booked that night. And people just kept getting like more hype about it. And like he, you know, described it. He's a good writer and he described it in a really interesting way. But then on the final night, he actually like put together the thing and like people had to be blindfolded to come in. And like, he just like had like a guy like eating on his roof, on the roof of his house. So it seemed like all weird and stuff. And there was a guy who was like, there was like a chicken coop there where they were like, yeah, we're going to kill that and like feed it to you. And then they just fed people like frozen dinners. And people were like, oh, it's delicious.
I was
this is
say,
incredible.
Wow. Do you know if the rating dropped after the event? Like after people actually tried it?
But yeah. It's a great video. People can check it out. The guy's brilliant.
My girlfriend and I have been getting super into high end food. But it's just hard to – I like cooking and I like the science of food and the art of cooking. But there's so much classist bullshit with it.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, not very accessible.
There's we're trying to get into this restaurant event in L.A. where they interview you, like a job interview, to be allowed to come
eat.
And at some point –
what is this? Which event is this?
It's called Wolf's Den, I think.
Oh, wolf's mouth?
Wolf's mouth, yeah.
It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard about that, where it's like they only feed like, what, 15 people at a time or something?
Right, like yeah. Once a month or something. But after a few interviews, we're just like, what are we doing? We're like interviewing to be able to eat food.
What are the questions like, and how much can you eat?
Right. No, yeah. Just literally, yeah, like your palate, your food experience, and like experience with decorum at a table and stuff like that.
Decorum, really?
Jeez, yeah, yeah.
Okay. They like quiz you on the dessert and salad forks and like yeah. Which one is which?
No, because there's this whole movement of they're like, it's super weird. They're trying to be punk and like subversive and break food rules, but you still have to do everything they say exactly like they want it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's like, that's not in the wolf mouth voice. Can you wear something else? Yeah.
That's so funny.
Because they consider like
obnoxious.
The people that you're going to be chatting with is part of the atmosphere that they are obliged to control, is the theory. But it ends up just being like a fascist eating experience.
Right. Like you're just hoping that you don't break some unspoken rule.
I mean, when you look at their website, it's not a restaurant. It's a dinner party. It's the intersection between food, music, and art. It's an exploration in social dynamics. It's friends, old and new. It's fleeting and always changing. No menus, no dress code, no pretense.
Oh, really? I desperately... No pretense, yeah.
Okay.
Every word preceding that was pretentious.
The most pretentious thing ever. I desperately want to get into that just so that I can like have the most pure experience of hatred like ever.
Right.
Just like looking around at the people.
You know, it'd be dope to go record it and we just get kicked the fuck out.
Yeah.
Just break all the wolves' mouth. It was like, you're blacklisted from Wolves Den Forever. I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. And it is there. It's the kind of place where if you go and see a 1-star review where someone's like, the food was all right. It took us 6 months to get in. And the chef was a dick and just talked about himself the whole time and dominated the conversation. And the chef will write back like a 5-page essay on like why that person is wrong.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing. A little group to troll.
Yeah. Okay, well. No, we need to get into this.
I know. I know a couple people who might be able to get us in.
We are not a zeitgeist show if we do not get into this.
Yeah.
And troll the fuck out of it.
And wear hidden microphones and all that shit.
Michael, what is something that is underrated?
Underrated. Okay. Well, as a comedian, of course, favorite comedies are dear to me. Mm. And even in our circles, knowing mostly other comedians, my favorite comedy show and my favorite comedy movie, no one else likes. So I have to plug them.
Okay.
For show, Freakazoid, from the period where we were blessed to have Steven fucking Spielberg, like creating and producing and overseeing shows.
Runs around
shows.
In underwear.
Exactly.
Freakazoid. Okay, I fuck with Freakazoid.
Ed Asner, Ricardo Montalban. And like some of the sharpest, you know, the writing that it's literally the jokes are so adult that that's why it got canceled.
Right.
And I don't mean edgy, but I mean like no kid is going to get that joke.
Right. And I loved it though. And I feel like I guess I haven't looked at it with adult eyes, but I remember at the time I was all about Freakazoid.
Yeah.
Because I felt it was kind of like in similar to Animaniacs where there were jokes that were seemingly out of my like, you know, sort of mental capability to understand.
Yeah, they all played the both layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Pixar is good at that now, but I feel like that Spielberg WB era was the beginning of like, we're going to have a kids show that the adults will also find funny.
Right.
And I think Freakazoid is the one show that pushed it too much towards the adult end of the spectrum.
Right.
It's way better as an adult. Like, definitely rewatch.
Where do you watch it now?
I mean, I steal it from this guy down my block who has a bag of DVDs.
Cool. I got a hard drive with me, so we'll link
it. It's only two seasons, yeah, and it's just dynamite. And if you're like, now that you're an adult who has a brain that analyzes how jokes work, some of the stuff is just so impressive.
Really good.
Yeah.
All right, what's the movie?
The movie, even more obscure, on theme, it's called Freaked. Not Todd Browning's Freaks, which I also find hilarious.
Right.
But Freaked. It's the only non-Bill and Ted movie that features Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is uncredited because he's in complete werewolf prosthetics the entire time. By far, Keanu Reeves' best performance. You got Randy Quaid, Mr. T, Bobcat Goldthwait, and it is the funniest script I've ever come across. Yeah.
What year?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's got to be 90s because it's like the entire soundtrack is the Butthole Surfers and there's claymation effects.
Right.
So you're like, okay, the 90s. But it is an amazing film that needs to be seen by a much wider audience.
93.
Yeah.
A vain actor, his best friend, and an activist end up at a mutant freak farm run by a weirdo scientist. All right.
Yep, where they get mutated with fertilizer and it's just delightful. It's a bit like Airplane crossed with Simpsons.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sold.
What is something that's overrated?
Recycling.
Yeah, fuck recycling.
All right.
Fuck the Earth.
We're trying to take a sample of what. do you care to explain what? Why?
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
Well, I did. I started looking into it after that. There, Penn and Teller had a show called Bullshit, where they called bullshit on things, and one was recycling. And since that brought that to my attention, I have been following news articles, studies on the value of recycling. And if you remember back to your school days, there's reduce, reuse, and recycle. Recycling is the least effective way to help our climate and environment situation. It hurts the economy the most. There's the least evidence that it's doing anything useful. Mm. Because even though we don't like the idea of filling giant landfills with garbage, the Earth is really large and there is a lot of space to fill with garbage.
Right.
What we need to do to prevent more carbon emissions and all the attendant catastrophes is reduce and reuse. Like, the main thing you can do as an American is waste less food. Like, across the board, everyone says, if you just eat all the groceries in your fridge, that is, like, better than buying a Prius. It's better than anything else you can do. Mm. Then reuse. You know, I'm wearing underwear I've had on for 5 days, and I think that helps the environment.
Smell terrible, but I admire you.
They are made from recycled underwear, so it's the double whammy.
So the difference between reusing and recycling is that you're just, like, taking a reusable bag to the grocery store and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Reuse.
Okay. Not buying disposable items.
Right.
Wearing clothes and shoes and driving your car and keeping your phone until those things don't work anymore.
Mm.
And just like I have a really old slow phone, and every time it runs slow, I just tell myself, you know, you're helping. That's like the environment tax. Cause getting a new iPhone every year is one of the worst things you can do.
Mm.
So what do? You just throw your cans in the garbage, like with everything?
Yeah. I don't recycle at all.
Do you smash them down first?
My understanding from looking into it is that the most effective is glass and aluminum. So I'm not going to like hate on people who do recycle those things. But another thing that's been found is when people have that blue bin in their house and they fill it up with trash, which they is not going to help as much as they think it is, they think to themselves, that's my bit for the environment today.
Right. Like they at least I put the glass in there.
Right. Homes that recycle are way more likely to waste way more and actually have a larger carbon footprint because they just tell themselves, I recycle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they absolve themselves of their responsibility.
Okay,
cool. Well,
reduce, reuse, close the loop.
Yeah. And you just throw your garbage everywhere, I've noticed, just out on the streets.
I just take the six-pack ring. I just go to the ocean. I go, fuck out of here.
Fuck you.
It's fuck you, fish.
It's actually a unique intersection of dining and performance art, Jack. And once you're on the list, I think you'll understand.
All right. We're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now at this very moment. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guests, what is a myth? What's something people believe to be true that is not?
I, just like how we eventually found out the word organic means nothing and is not enforced on our food, I'm coming to suspect that Netflix original doesn't mean anything. And I think people still think it does. Like when HBO produces something, it comes with a certain standard you expect. Not everything HBO makes is great, but you get the vibe. And it's because when they say that, it actually means they produced it.
Right.
Their executives fucked with it.
Right.
It was molded to their
pipeline,
brain. Right.
Yeah.
And Netflix originals, you get like, yes, House of Cards and Beast of No Nations were like that. But there's this huge influx of like foreign movies that just weren't distributed in the US and they just stamped Netflix original on it. And I keep getting fooled by this shit.
Right.
Like, because up till now, other than like Real Rob and the Adam Sandler slate, every Netflix original has really impressed me, or at least been solid. And I think we're starting to fall off.
The Ranch was like sort of like expanding. The beginning of the end for me is when I started seeing that they were kind of like messing with the formula. But yeah, now it seems like a lot of even American production companies, they'll do dump shit on Netflix. You're like, hey, you want to license this? And we'll call it a Netflix original.
And now I've been reading like, in entertainment news, such and such movie got dropped because they don't want to promote it.
Right.
And then 5 months later, I see it as a Netflix original. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I used to count on that. Like I could count on, you know, if Jake Gyllenhaal's in something, the script is strong.
Right. At the same time,
saw Prince of Persia.
And then I saw question everything.
Right. The Gyllenhaal brand is strong. I do worry about, like, there not being a place for people to see, like, indie movies and stuff like that, because I guess Amazon is now going in the opposite direction, and they're basically like, we're taking everything in-house and we're going to produce these huge blockbuster things, whereas before they were producing things like Manchester by the Sea and stuff like that. So I do like that there's a place that is still, like, funding movies that aren't getting widely released or whatever. But
they're not
I'm
really
just
producing.
More of an
they're
artistic
like,
soul.
Yeah,
Michael,
but they're,
I don't
yeah.
know.
They're getting the rights though to just. It's not like they're behind actually the generation of these films. They're, they're just like, hey, I guess we'll pay you to license it to put it on our service.
That's what I'm getting is I wonder if some, because you know everything's just the computer tells them what to do basically over there. And I wonder if some algorithm just told them like, that little logo that says Netflix Original is really working for us, and now they're overusing it. Because also when I log on now, it's almost all Netflix Original. It's starting to lose its impact.
All right. Well, we are going to move on to the stories. We will get back to Netflix Originals because looking at Google Trends, there are a couple on there that really popped up. So let's get into a quick review of the Olympics before our first break. Khloe Kim! First generation Korean or second generation Korean, depending on. So this is the main thing I want to talk about, is the fact that there's no agreed on definition of first generation Korean. I assumed first generation meant that you were the first generation that was born in the United States. My wife is first generation Korean, like Khloe Kim. And apparently that's not an agreed on thing because I saw somebody referring to Khloe Kim as second generation and her parents who immigrated here as first generation American. Let's just make up our minds, guys. Come on.
So there's no like dictionary definition of what counts?
No. When you go to Wikipedia, they say first generation means one of two completely conflicting things.
Yeah, because in Japanese, I'm considered Nisei. Which is a person born in the U.S.
Right.
whose parents are from Japan.
Yeah.
And that's considered second generation. But I'm like, but aren't I the first? You feel like it's about your birth, not if you immigrate. So I don't know.
Man,
yeah. Whatever.
There's such a robust racist lexicon in every culture.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
But anyways, she crushed it. She was basically already had the gold medal locked away. And then she was like, you know, I really didn't want to come here and just win gold without doing my best. And so she put up a final run that like scored a 98 or something like that.
Blacked out. Cause I think the one, it was a Chinese snowboarder who was the closest person to put pressure on her. And when she fucked up her last trick, it was in the bag. And then she went and she was like, all right, fuck it. Let me show you how Khloe Kim does, and it was
she hit back-to-back 1080 degree spins, which, I'm not good enough at math to figure
three.
Out.
That's three.
three spins, which that's too many spins for somebody to be able to do in the air and not throw up on themselves.
You can see why they came up with euphemisms, though. It was like, and she's doing one, two, three spins, three air spins
Kim. She did back-to-back three air spins. And
that's like six spins.
That would be me if I was an Olympics commentator. Sometimes they get too thick with the lingo, though.
Yeah,
where I'm just like, what the fuck does that mean?
They're like Indy Melon to Nosebone. Right. Sick. And I'm like, all right. I mean, that shit looked dope. I don't know what a rodeo flip is, but I fuck with it.
But both her and Sean White, the Flying Tomato, both looked like we talked yesterday about the Russian figure skater who's like 15 years old and who, when you watch her skate, you can just like it's. Your eyes can tell the difference that she's like a level above, even if you don't know shit about figure skating. And like, I had the same experience with Khloe Kim and, Sean White.
Yeah.
Like, they were both just, they looked like their bodies worked differently with gravity than the rest of the competitors.
They spun much more. You could really see like people torquing their bodies to get the spin where you just see them kind of casual, just whoop, I'm spinning out of it.
Yeah.
And that is my expert commentary on snowboarding.
Shout out to Khloe Kim. I can't imagine that it was an easy thing for her to be like, no, I don't want to play violin and piano, mom and dad. I want to do snowboarding.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I felt bad as a Asian kid. I felt like even the gold medal might not be good enough for her parents.
Right. Yeah, didn't you say you told your mom?
Dude, my mom, she was like, what school did she go to? I'm like, what?
She's 17.
She's 17. No, yeah. High school.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, it should be Harvard. I'm like, right. I don't look, mom. I didn't go there. And she's like, that's why we don't talk.
Is that going to get her into Harvard?
Yeah. She's like, I love the zeitgeist, though.
And then really quickly, I wanted to talk about this other Russian figure skater, not the 15-year-old we were talking about before. She is an 18-year-old. Her name is Evgenia Medvedeva.
Stuck the landing
okay.
On
yeah, nailed it. Who
like you were doing a Borat.
Evgenia, my wife. She was... if you're watching NBC's enhanced coverage of events, so she won... gold or came in first in qualifying. I'm not sure which it was, but she explained on NBC's enhanced coverage of the event that her short program is about, quote, the flight of the soul as it leaves someone's body at the point of clinical death, which I was amazed by and loved. And apparently the judges did too, because she got the highest score ever for a lady short program. But apparently she also had a previous routine set to the soundtrack from Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. And I think we have some of the audio from that.
It's a very nice piano piece.
Yeah. Uh-oh. What is...
The judges are upset.
Is that George Bush?
Yeah, that was George Bush saying... Yes, those are the sounds of 9/11
wow.
That she figure skated to and choreographed her routine to wow. In the past. So she is like the dark soul of figure skating. But she's pretty badass. It's worth watching her.
It's wild to watch, see someone figure skate with 9/11 sounds in the background. Like, because she's really elegant and graceful. And then you're like,
And important to note, that routine like killed for her, right? It crashed.
Right. Yeah.
It's not like she did that and she's the weird outcast.
Right. Yeah.
Like, no, this is her thing.
Yeah. And
I can't wait for the killing fields. In
but
two
it's
years.
So funny. Yeah. When you see her, like, when, who was it yesterday or the day before she was watching her teammates skate, she just looks like the most brightest, bubbliest person.
Right.
And then to then know, like, deep down, she's like, I only skate to the sounds of clinical death.
Yeah. Like, no, wow. She is pure Russia, like on the surface, just completely calm, cool, collected, looks like a happy teenager. And then she is just, but nothing matters because life is death and we will all die alone in darkness, is sort of the vibe you get off of her.
I am just learning this now. That's upsetting.
Oh, Michael, I'm so sorry. Yes, we do all die alone.
Okay.
Oh, God.
All right.
21
well,
grams.
That's going to do it for our first section. Hope you learned something, too, and we'll be right back after this. And we're back, and we wanted to talk about just ways that the government is finding to fuck the little guy. And there's a handful of stories coming together neatly for our theme. We're always hoping that we'll get a nice cohesive theme, and the government cooperated by just fucking over consumers.
Start up the outrage machine.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Trump administration. So, Miles, I came in this morning. I said, did you hear about the change to Snap?
And I was like, yo, people are heated. The layout of the new Snapchat is pretty whack, and people are really fucked up over it. And I said, I don't really fuck with Snapchat, but I guess the kids are upset.
Right, which is apparently a thing that is happening. Anna yesterday was, you know, super producer Anna Hosnier. Being one of the kids herself, was like mad about it and said it wasn't lit, which is the worst thing somebody of that generation can say.
That is the proper nomenclature.
Yeah, so SNAP being also the food stamp program.
Oh, you meant supplemental nutrition assistance program.
Right.
Okay.
So
yeah, that's fucked up too.
Yeah. So the... Trump administration announced that they would like to change the food stamp allowances, which nobody has had a complaint with other than, you know, extreme, extreme right-wing people who still believe that welfare queens are a thing, which they're not. Right. That was just a false story during the Reagan administration. So they think that people are getting by too easily on food stamps. And what they're proposing is to basically replace food stamps, or at least a big portion of food stamps, with a program where they ship canned food to people who would previously be able to go to the store and use food stamps to buy food for themselves.
As Mick Mulvaney says, a blue apron type
program.
That's okay. How, in what way is that blue apron?
That food is being shipped to their
house.
That
is it.
So
that
any, okay, and food
nothing,
in a box is blue apron.
Nothing fresh.
Nothing fresh. It's just canned food.
It's a predetermined diet. Right. That the government will send to you with things like peanut butter and pasta,
right.
Shelf-stable milk. Oh, yum. Canned meats and fruits and cereal.
Yeah.
With no fresh vegetables or meat, which that's usually what's in a regular Blue Apron.
And I'm sure they'd be super receptive to people who have like peanut allergies or whatever. I'm sure the government would be great at
dealing
with those.
What's even the proposed upside? Is that cheaper than the food stamp program?
So what they're saying is that that would allow them to buy food at like in mass quantities, and that would like give them a price break.
Yeah, like at half the cost.
Right, exactly. But they're not counting all of the difficulties of like shipping. Like people pointed out that Blue Apron had a really rough financial year last year because it's just incredibly expensive to do what they do, like send food to people and, you know, give people any choice or like a good user experience and deliver that food on time. So this goes against all research in sort of charity and how we give charity to other countries, how we give charity inside our own country has been leading in the opposite direction of this. It's basically been saying, we would much prefer that you give people money or give the charity money so that we can redistribute that money to people, because the best form of charity and the most effective way to help people is by giving them money because they know what they need. Like, whereas canned food drives, like people might not need canned food or they might not need like beef stew. Yeah. Beef stew might not be good for them because they have an infant.
I don't need peaches in light syrup because I have glaucoma.
Right, exactly.
That's what I need fucking help with.
I think it's important to highlight, this is not the people who are members of the program saying, like, we need money instead of food. Oh, just send us cash. These are people whose interest is what would make the best outcome for all of society, including economically.
Right.
These are studies.
Right.
So it's like, how do you not foresee the downstream costs if you're shipping all of your poorest citizens boxes and boxes of peanut butter and cling peaches?
Right.
There's huge downstream costs there, you know, with food deserts and healthcare costs. That's insane.
Right.
Yeah, and even with the proposed idea, they expect the states to shoulder all the cost of distributing and putting the thing together. So it's like, it's just this fucking idea. It's not even a real thing. It's just like, let's just see what people think so we can, you know, further help people who are poor feel ashamed of their situation.
Right. And the disparity is so bizarrely heightened in our country that it's like, Wyatt Coke could probably just pay for this program out of his pockets, like the change
reason,
in his pockets.
For some reason, this program made me think of Wyatt Coke, too, because
the
central ethos of this is rich white Republicans who think they know what's best for other people, and that the problem poor people have is that they have too much control over their own decision making, and that they just aren't like smart enough or capable enough to make smart decisions for themselves. And so that the real problem is that, you know, they need to make those decisions for them. Whereas it's just, you know, every study will tell you the real problem is that they have been, you know, institutionally discriminated against. Both, you know, poor white people, poor black people have been institutionally discriminated against. And America is not a particularly socially mobile society. Like, Americans think that it's all based on, you know, how hard you work and how much you're willing to pull yourself up.
It says it is on the box. The box of that America comes in has a big shiny sticker that says socially mobile
on the
society.
Label, there. Read it. There was a Paul Ryan quote from earlier in the year where he was saying, like, where you are born has nothing to do with where you end up in America.
Oh, and for sure.
So The Economist came back and was like, you know, compare to America, to other countries, like Finland, Norway, Denmark, other Western countries.
All those shithole countries.
Relatively egalitarian. And basically what your father makes allows people to tell within 20% what you'll end up making in those countries, whereas in America it's 50%. So it's like way more deterministic in the United States. Right. Than in other Western countries that have more like socialist policies, what right. we would consider to be socialist policies.
But now it's conflicted with capitalism because, you know, the huge opponents of this shitty Blue Apron for Poor's program is the Food Marketing Institute, which is the largest, like, the lobbying group for supermarkets.
Right.
And food retailers.
They're just trying to unload their cans like you are when you go to the canned food drive and give all the bullshit.
They're like,
bro,
you're
going to
send people boxes. They will not buy at the fucking stores. So what the fuck are you going to do?
So this is a place where Walmart is actually on the people's side.
Right. Where they're like, oh, we like EBT because that means we get the money.
Right.
So it's really just a fight of who's going to get the money. Is it the canned food people or the food retailers?
It's big box, you guys. It's
big
this
box.
Cadre of box factories all over the country just trying to get everything boxed.
In a box. Yeah. Dude, I bet box business is booming.
Yeah, you see boxes on the rise lately.
All right, let's talk about another policy that the Trump administration released yesterday. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has spent the past, you know, it was created by Elizabeth Warren back when she was still a professor at Harvard.
Oh, you mean socialist cuck?
Right, socialist cuck, Elizabeth Warren. And it was basically after the financial crisis, you know, they saw all of this rampant corruption within the financial industry, and they decided to create a independent agency that was able to look at financial services and, you know, fine companies if they did shady shit. And so far, since they were instituted in 2010, they've given back $11.8 billion to 29 million consumers since 2011. So that's an average of $407 returned to roughly 9% of the U.S. population. So they're like helping people out. Like that's giving
but they're
back.
Hurting the banks, Jack.
So that is
they're
the
hurting
argument.
Wells Fargo, Jack.
The extremely wealthy financial companies that are like making record profits in the past 10 years have claimed that this agency is making it impossible for them to do business. And so when Trump came into power, he put Mick Mulvaney in charge of the CFPB, and he fucking hates the CFPB, has come out and specifically said in the past that, like, he thinks it shouldn't exist. And so he announced.
That's all Trump does, though. It's like, right. I expected his Secretary of Interior to just be someone who's like, I only go outside. I never enter a building.
Right.
Like,
right.
Everything
right.
is just bizarro opposite world.
Right.
As if you're a kid with blocks and holes. And you're matching them to the opposite shape. It's
right.
just so insane.
Just jamming it in.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, yeah, the new head of CFPB, Daddy Warbucks.
Right. Yeah. So their policies, surprisingly, he recently requested a $0 budget for the January to March mm-hmm, Q1, mm-hmm. Saying the Bureau would draw on their reserves instead because they're apparently just crushing it. Financially, and then they are trying to change it so that they are overseen by Congress. The whole idea is that they're overseen by the Federal Reserve, and so they have independent funding, so like Republican, Democratic squabbling cannot get in the way of them doing their job, and they're basically trying to change that so that they are funded by Congress.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll effectively be the death of this agency that was in place for a very brief time and actually giving money back to consumers.
That could be a slippery slope because if they lose the House, you know, shit could change. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's weird how many organizations that get insanely profitable use those profits to craft a loud narrative that they're poor, like that they can't catch a
right.
break or make any money.
Right, right.
And it's like, yeah, but you're crafting that narrative with a team of highly paid lobbyists. It's a self-defeating argument.
Yeah. It's a difficult argument because, you know, people in the financial industry will just tell you, no, but you have to understand, like, this bureau is, like, the worst. And, you know, I know a lot of these people, and they argue it with conviction. And, like, I can't argue with them because it's like they're saying, you don't speak Chinese. This person's saying a crazy thing in Chinese. So you just have to trust me. And like, I don't. I'm like, okay, fine. I mean,
yeah, dude, the banks are hurting, man. You know, I was trying to explain to my kids, man, they got to get an iPhone 6.
Right.
I mean, 6S, but, you know, God, you start telling your kids that.
Right. It's true. The iPhone 6 sucks.
My kid has to drive a used Range Rover. Okay? Shit is embarrassing.
So, finally, for a bit of inspirational truth to power, the West Virginia House floor, a young woman who is running to be a state delegate in that state, Lissa Lucas, L-I-S-S-A Lucas, is a Democrat. She's trying to run for the House of Delegates. She got up to speak on a bill that was about to be voted on, and she was pointing out that, you know, the people who were voting on this bill to a large degree had been funded by the energy industry.
No.
And so here, let's listen to how her testimony went.
I'd also like to point out that the people who are going to be speaking in favor of this bill are all going to be paid by the industry. And the people who are going to be voting on this bill are also often paid by the industry. For example, on the Judiciary Committee, Charlotte Lane, about $10,000 from gas and oil interests, including AEP, Marathon, First Energy, Dominion, EQT, and I could go on. Next, let's talk about John Schott from Mercer.
These are all people who are there.
First Energy, $2,000. Appalachian Power, $2,000. Steptoe and Johnson, that's
and are those
gas and oil
9/11 sounds in the background? That's impressive.
Russell Energy, $1,000. EQT, $1,000. And I could go on. Now let's talk about Jason Harshbarger.
Let's talk about Jason.
Ms. Lucas, we ask no personal comments be made.
If you want to talk about this, is not personal comments.
It is a personal comment, and I'm going to call you out of order if you're talking about individuals on the committee.
Yeah. Do not question Big Brother.
Just address the bill. Right. If not, I'll ask you to please step down.
So now they're turning off her mic.
So, yeah, she's still talking, but they turned off her mic.
$3,500, about 40% his money.
Not only is politics all fake, it's so antithetical to reality when someone's just like, look, we all know what the fuck's going on.
Right.
Let me just lay it out. Everyone's like, get them out of
get
here.
Out. I don't want that.
The
I don't
show,
want that.
The illusion is dropping. Yeah.
It's like turning the lights on at the club. Right. You know, you don't want to see that.
Right.
But sometimes that's the truth, Ruth.
Right. And at the end there, two big, fat, old white dudes came up and like basically carted her off by her arms.
Kind of like strong-arming her, which has always been like, yo, don't. Put your hands on her like that.
Yeah.
Just cut her mic off and then you can have a police officer do something, but don't send your goons up there who are probably the same guys she probably called out. Right. They're like, all right, come on, man. We've heard enough. We've heard enough reality.
By the way, Jason Harshbarger, the person who she was about to talk about, is who she is running against. He's a Republican who she's running against in the upcoming election. So they did not want her speaking on his name.
But see, that's good. You know, that it's good to see people. You know, at least especially in a state like that in West Virginia that is very dependent on coal and things like that, where there are people who are trying to run who see the imbalance of power in that state. And just in general, you know, good to see people going out and just trying to talk that shit because we need more people speaking that truth to power.
Mm. And finally, just some sort of legislative stuff. This was something I was wondering about earlier. I know that this was the week that we were supposed to hear about immigration and Congress was the Senate was supposed to actually talk about immigration, put it up for debate. What's going on with that, Miles?
So Monday, Chuck Grassley and Republicans, they put a bill forward that definitely follows the framework that Trump was saying that he wanted, which is that essentially like, you know, if you want citizenship for some of these DACA eligible people, then I want border money and I want to cut down legal immigration. So this thing creates like a $25 billion like trust fund sort of thing to create the wall and border security. Then it also limits legal immigration like, you know, just family reunification and the visa diversity lottery, as well as tightening like immigration enforcement within our country, within the borders. And so it's a bill that is probably not going to get the 60 votes they need because it's just pure fuckery. And it's just like, all right, well, fine, we'll give you this thing, but we also want all the shit that you're against also.
Right.
So it's not much of a deal. And again, they need 60 votes, and that means they're going to need probably 9 Democrats at least to get this thing over the line, which seems pretty unlikely because Mitch McConnell said when we tried to avert the last shutdown was like, look, okay, We'll have an open discussion on the floor. We can submit amendments and we can do this the right way. But suddenly now, this morning, he's telling people that he wants the entire debate with like all the other competing proposals that like Democrats and Republicans are putting forward. He wants it to be done by the end of this week or it's off.
Mm.
And the Senate usually wraps up their business by end of day Thursday. So that's less than 3 full days to solve a decades old issue. So it's very, I don't know, man. Again, we were saying this. Mitch McConnell is a fucking piece of shit, and I don't care what he says. Even he's like, well, I promise to. No, fuck you, dude. Like, we knew you were going to do it dirty. You always lie. You lie straight to people's faces. I feel like Dick Durbin was, like, telling him, he's like, yo, I defended you to people who were really skeptical. Don't do this now. You promised this, like, to have this open discussion, and we can actually deliberate properly, like a bipartisan, the greatest deliberative body in the land can do. And it's just when you really couple that with the, like, you know, the GOP was blocking out months for debate and discussion over gutting Obamacare and trying to do that many times and trying to pass that god-awful tax scam, that suddenly with this, it's like, okay, we got to get done 3 days. So it's clearly on their terms, and we'll see what happens. I mean, they got a couple days, but look, after March 5th, when the DACA thing expires – there could be roughly, what, like 1,000 recipients per day begin to lose their work permits and at the risk of deportation. So, I mean, it seems like what they may likely want to try and do is just extend it for a year and just kick the can down the road. But I think we were all trying to have an actual solution to this. So, I don't know. We'll see what Chuck Schumer and the rest of the gang can pull together, because the House Democrats were really hoping that they could actually get a bill done in the Senate that would put a little bit of pressure on the House. And I don't know if that's going to happen. But
and
we'll
is it just shorter, or is it was going to be public and now it's private also?
No, it's going to be public.
It's still going to be
public.
But
it was
just
like,
zips by. Yeah.
He's like, well, I said it would be a week and this is the week, so it's going to be done in this week. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and according to my, you know, neck, we'll see what happens. But he, again.
He does not have a neck.
But. He has something there. yeah, again, it's just another example of Democrats being a little naive. And not counting on Republicans to pull as many stunts and tricks as they can to sort of hamstring this whole reform push.
Right. So they're putting out a thing they know Democrats are going to hate, and they're saying, all right, now we have to agree on something in the next 2 days.
Yeah, okay, if you want to amend it, like, here we go, let's have debate now. But 2 days, come on.
Right,
like,
and then at the end they'll presumably be like, sorry, you guys didn't.
So is this it?
Yeah.
We're going to vote on this? You guys like this? And if not, well, then I guess we'll see how this shakes up, because
so
this news just came out that he was like, we have to finish this week.
Yeah.
Which is insane. But again, let's see what happens.
Do you think that, like, he can, when he inhales, like, blow the, like, his neck
like
out?
A bullfrog?
Like
a bullfrog
out?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Bullfrog out?
No, they're,
I feel like
they're ornamental.
To...
They're
oh,
ornamental,
really?
Those flaps.
Just, but I mean, when he's trying to, like, you know, attract his wife to him, do you think he can maybe do that?
I mean,
like,
Elaine Chao, we've seen
that's
her.
How he
she
presents.
Looks like a capitalist robot who
right.
is unmoved by anything, so...
I don't know.
She had to stand behind Trump when he said the white supremacists were good people.
Right.
And she was like, oh, boy. Why am I up here?
There's sort of breaking news 4 hours ago, but Netanyahu, the boy, the Israeli prime minister, was embroiled in a bribery scandal. And the Israeli police have just come out and recommended that he be indicted in a pair of corruption cases. So that's
because corruption is the worst crime.
That's embarrassing.
But hey, do what you got to do. Let's see if they can follow through.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with some Google Trends. And we're back. And I should have said for more on the Netanyahu story, you should check out our sister podcast, Culture Kings. Ethnically Ambiguous, hosted by super producer Anna Hosnier. As we went to break, she looked at me and said, if you ever step on Ethnically Ambiguous again, and then made a slashing gesture at her throat.
And I was like, yo, where did you get that box cutter from?
Right.
She's like, I keep the blade under my tongue.
Yeah. But they do a really good job of, you know, making you understand all these stories from that region of the world that I had sort of tuned out in the past because I'm a bad person. But, you know, if you find yourself tuning some of those stories out, or, you know, stories about Syria and Israel and Palestine and, you know, the Middle East in general, you should definitely check their show out. They make it make sense and they make you care about it. All right, guys. So first up, we wanted to take a look at a Twitter trend, Miles, that you have been noticing.
Just the last 2 days. Look, white people don't want black people. They don't want us to have anything. Okay, so first, fucking yesterday with the Obama portraits, like, there was a coordinated smear campaign from the likes of the right. You know, because Kehinde Wiley, who did the Obama portrait, also did versions of, like, classical art of, like, beheadings or whatever, and he does it in a style. Like, anyway, they basically were just – there was a lot of 4chan and you know, R the Donald subreddit-type freaks out there trying to be like, oh, this is racist, this is bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And just – it was, like, just a coordinated smear. And a lot of people suddenly became art critics yesterday when the portraits came out. They're like, oh, this this looks terrible. This is not art. Oh, Michelle Obama looks like a pencil drawing or whatever. It's like, motherfucker, do you know art? Okay. Your avatar is you wearing a camouflage Under Armour hoodie. Okay. Also, so that was one thing. And I was like, okay, whatever. This is to be expected because this is sort of the state of America. Yeah. But then also, as someone pointed out, how much there are people who really need to point out to black people that Wakanda, the imaginary kingdom from the Black Panther film that has many people excited, especially people of color, because look, oh, look, we got our own movie now that is seemingly unoffensive. So many people were tweeting stuff like, Wakanda is not real. Wakanda, do they realize Wakanda is not a real place? Dear black people, repeat after me. Wakanda is not real. These are all different tweets. I'm not just saying this over and over.
No,
LOL,
they're...
Wakanda is fiction. Ancient Egypt wasn't black. Wakanda is not a real place. So, look.
But Gotham City is.
Yeah. And Krypton is real. And Dungeons & Dragons is real.
Oh, it was. It got blown up. Catch up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. R.I.P. Rest in power to Krypton. But, yeah, again, we don't – Star Wars, Tatooine is not real. Endor is not real.
Right.
Look, we know Alderaan is not real. Okay?
Hogwarts, though, real.
Very real.
Yes.
Okay, don't fuck around with Hogwarts. Whatever. I mean, again, it's just – I guess because of the idea of that this is a place where Africans still had the agency over their own kingdom without colonialism or whatever to do as they saw fit. It's like, oh, my God.
So it's people getting excited about the Black Panther movie coming out and white people responding by pointing out that the movie is fictional.
Yeah, because, you know, some people in their even on their Twitter names are putting stuff about Wakanda
like
in
a
there.
Citizen of Wakanda.
Yeah, or right, whatever. Right. And then that's got people so fucking angry.
It's worse than a straw man argument. It's condescending to someone who doesn't exist. It's like inventing someone dumber than you.
Right.
So you could go, actually, and you're just in a room alone. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
I mean, yeah, you should just clap back and be like, oh, it's not? Can you show me any literature that proves Wakanda is not real?
Right.
And just send them on a very easy Google search. But yeah, that's new in white people don't want us to have anything news. Wakanda is not real. Update, Wakanda is not real. And also, you know, everything to do with
like
the
she was sketched.
Yeah, everything is racist if it has to do with the Obamas. So that's it for me in the field.
Back to you. So we just wanted to look at some Google trends from the past 14 days and that I had kind of missed. So Cloverfield Paradox, I knew that was released after the Super Bowl. And, you know, apparently that worked because that is the top search trend, like the top term that leapt out of nowhere from the 3rd through the 13th. So they nailed it with the release of that. But, Michael, you watched Cloverfield Paradox and you're saying they didn't quite nail it with the execution?
More than that, I booed over your introduction. We were talking earlier about Netflix originals, and this is the movie that made me realize, oh, this scene is over, the Netflix original scene. Because, and there's a great podcast our ex-compatriots, David Christopher Bell and Tom Ryman do, called We Just Watched, and they covered it and pointed out that, like, it's painfully transparent that it's Die Hard syndrome, where it's an unrelated script. The script was originally called God Particle, and they've done the minimal amount to make it Cloverfield. It's like slapping a Cloverfield bumper sticker on it. There's one effects shot that shows a Cloverfield-like creature, and they reshot some scenes where they say the word Cloverfield, and they shot this ridiculous insert of Donald Logue on TV just giving a bunch of exposition about Cloverfield that the astronauts watch from the space station for no reason while crises are going on. They're like, hey, let's tune on the TV.
Let's watch Donald Logue.
To watch Donald Logue say, hey, everyone, this movie you're about to watch that will never mention Cloverfield again is about Cloverfield.
Right.
And it's lazy to the point that all of their outfits and many of the props say Helios on them because that is the name of the ship. And yet in all the reshoots, they refer to it as the Cloverfield. And literally, this was supposed to be the key to the franchise,
right?
That explained like
everything,
how right. Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane are in the same universe at all. And it just does not. It doesn't even try. It was a direct DVD movie that they slapped some paint on and released as a Netflix original. And I'm like, that kills the Netflix original juice that was going. I hate it.
Right. Did you watch 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah. Much, much, much stronger.
So that was like a really fun movie, but I also felt like it was a great movie that at the end, again, just like pasted on the Cloverfield thing. And I don't know. It felt very like mashed together. Like they had a great movie and then J.J. Abrams was like, okay, I want that to be a Cloverfield movie. So let's add some monsters at the very end that have nothing to do with the thing that you just watched and enjoyed.
I think the only thing connecting them is it's kind of like Exquisite Corpse, because it was like monster movie that ends with the apocalypse. The next movie is apocalypse that ends with aliens.
Right.
Spoiler alert. The Cloverfield paradox is aliens at the beginning ends with time travel, and they've already announced Cloverfield 4 is going to be the Cloverfield monster appears in World War II times.
Right.
So, and again, it's a script that was not designed to be a Cloverfield movie. So they're taking some mid-shelf World War II, like, let's do the Mission and Kill Nazis movie, and they're going to add some Cloverfield scenes and release it.
That's
what are they doing?
Yeah. That'd be great if it was just like a straightforward, like, Saving Private Ryan type movie. Like, and they're just like, yeah, but then at the end,
yeah,
it's instead like, of.
Yeah, back in Iowa, I got a girl waiting for me.
Yeah.
So, miss her a lot.
Instead of the air fleet coming in and, like, saving them, it's a Cloverfield monster. Yeah,
it's the interconnectedness of like an Arrested Development, but with nothing behind it.
Right.
Like there's a shot in Cloverfield Paradox where they're just in the cockpit and suddenly it cuts to a close up on the corner of the console of a Slusho bobblehead doll. And I saw online everyone freaking out like, what does it mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? That the art director put that there for a cheap insert shot to make it seem like a Cloverfield movie.
Right.
It doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, I think that's overrated too. Like when, like, Black Mirror has an episode apparently in this last season where it suggests that everything is like in a connected universe, possibly.
Yes.
And it's like, I don't like that necessarily.
Yeah, I don't need that either.
Ties direct connections where it's like someone says a line and you're like, oh, I guess during the events of this across the country, that other episode's happening because they referenced that it was on the news. You're like, what is that ad really?
Right. Like Twilight Zone wouldn't have been better if at the end they were like all part of a shared universe.
It was all the same day.
Right. So, I don't know. And I also worry about this because this is the second movie that they've released, Netflix, that the release has been extremely successful. Both Bright and this had...
I can't believe Bright
huge
crushed.
Releases.
Yeah.
And but they were both bad movies, and it's just like that is always a problem when a media company is having a lot of success, but it's completely disconnected from quality, then they start to lose their way a little bit. So.
I was really thinking about this with Bright because they've already announced Bright 2.
Right.
And I have to assume that it's because Netflix – I mean, you know, the classic story is House of Cards is because – they had a poll and people were like, our favorite director is David Fincher, our favorite actor is Kevin Spacey. So they put them together.
Right.
So if that's their model, if that's where they take their cues, people, we gotta help Netflix out. We can't keep watching shit like Bright to see how bad it is.
Right, right.
Because then they see a computer readout that says, oh, kids love Bright.
It's
and it's like, and what they don't realize is, no one's going to watch Bright 2. We all watched Bright 1 because those allegations came out and because we heard it was so crazy bad. But I don't need to see another movie that awful.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're going to take these big swings based on popular flops.
Yeah.
And I just – yeah, it's incentivizing absolutely the wrong thing.
Yep.
Right.
We're encouraging mediocrity, guys.
Yeah. I don't know how much people realize how – like Netflix, the huge advantage they have is all driven by the fact that they can see what we watch. And so they have the ability to be like, wow, people would actually watch The Ranch because they like Two and a Half Men with fucking Ashton Kutcher and Westerns or whatever. So they just like mash two things together. And that's apparently people like Will Smith movies and fucking The Lord of the Rings.
The creepiest is when they'll tweet those breakdown, the like, at Miles of Gray. Hey, we saw that you watched 18 minutes of this. Yeah, what'd like, you think
nah,
of it?
Nah, nah.
Altered Carbon is also up there. That's their new show. None of us have seen it. We watched the first 2 minutes, and it seems to open with like a pretty graphic
shower. Well, not graphic. It's just like someone's bloody, they're taking a shower and having sex, and then I don't know. Whatever.
Hot. Travis
didn't
Scott.
Get me.
I don't know if it's as problematic as it seems, but the trailer just made me brace for it being really troubling because, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know if this is the plot, but from what I could piece together, it seemed like it's about an Asian guy who dies and becomes reformulated as a white guy who knows martial arts because he has an Asian guy inside of him.
Oh.
That is like, I don't know. That's what the trailer seems to suggest.
Let me read
heavily.
The quick synopsis.
Yeah, let's hear it.
More than 300 years in the future, society has been transformed by new technology, leading to human bodies being interchangeable and death no longer being permanent. Takeshi Kovacs. Okay, very interesting name. Are you like a Croatian-Japanese person? Is the only surviving soldier of a group of elite interstellar warriors who were defeated in an uprising against the New World Order. His mind was imprisoned for centuries until an impossibly wealthy businessman, Lawrence Bancroft, offers him the chance to live again. Kovacs will have to do something for Bancroft, though, if he wants to be resurrected. I don't know.
But there's this, like, if it is true that that's what it is, it's just the peak whitewashing. It's like literally in the plot, the guy dies so he can be reincarnated as a handsome white guy. Right.
But that's also why I know karate.
Right.
And that's not problematic because I was Asian before. Yeah.
If only we could make karate movies with white people.
Oh, here. This is what you do.
How do we do it?
So an Asian guy dies and then you put his soul in a white man's body.
Wow.
Boom.
Done.
Done it again.
And then finally, we have been quoting apparently a meme, we're calling it the Uganda Knuckles meme, around the office. In particular, super producer Anna Hosnier has been
just yelling it out.
Yeah, yelling it out in the office. It's gotten into all of our heads, and we haven't quite figured out what – I guess there was an episode of Reply All where they explained it, and I listened to that episode. I still don't totally have it figured out, but Michael, so you kind of – chased this down a little bit.
Well, this is hilarious because I'm regurgitating information to you that I heard on Culture Kings, which is from your network,
right?
But they were quoting the Reply All episode.
Wow. Okay.
And then I went online and researched because the Culture Kings were just saying how like it's wildly offensive and yet they couldn't stop laughing. So
right.
I was like, well, if you can't stop laughing, I gotta see it. And I will admit it had me cackling and feeling guilty at the same time. But this was a meme a long time ago. There's a Ugandan action movie, like war movie, and the trailer went around because it is a bad movie. It's one of those funny bad movie trailers.
Apparently it's like a white dude from America who like failed at his job and then was just like, I'm going to go to Uganda and make action movies on a $0 budget. Like literally each movie has a $30 budget. And like, they're actually more, modern than you think. They look like they're from like the 60s, but they're actually from a few years ago.
And forgive me for this, but basically there's a lot of pullout lines that are like, do you know the way? The way of the devil? This man is of the devil.
Right.
So fast forward to now. I don't know how people come up with what they combine into memes. It's some kind of weird genius. Fast forward to now. Someone goes into, I forget what video game, just like VR Hang or something, where you can just be an avatar and it's just a chat room. Makes a really shitty looking version of Knuckles from Sonic the Hedgehog universe, just like a really derpy one that's tiny. So it's only like half the size. They're like Porg sized if it were Star Wars. And they'll go anywhere, like if people are trying to have a virtual wedding, which has its own problems. Why are you doing that? You'll just have full sized humans with suddenly a flash mob of tiny little Sonic and Knuckles porgs coming in and be like, excuse us, do you know the way? And they'd be like, he does not know the way. Chase him. Why are you running? And they'll just like, it's the classic thing people do on video games, like fuck up their game, follow them incessantly.
Right.
But it's just, it is really funny when you get someone who, like me, does not know what the hell is going on,
right,
is trying to ask them questions that, like, can I help you? Right. It's pretty funny and wildly offensive.
Yes. All right. Well, that explains a lot about super producer
guys,
Anna
Hosea. Uganda is not real.
Uganda.
Uganda is not
wake
real.
Up, sheeple.
That's the running joke of it, yeah. Memes are so fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it's like the entire Jungian consciousness just doing free association.
Right. As a mass, like, zeitgeist brain. Yeah.
And you can ask anyone, why did you do that? And they'll just be like, other people did it.
Right.
And then, you'll never track down the original person who can explain why the fuck this came into existence.
Yeah. But it's like group hive mind joke writing that has a weird, like, dream logic.
Yeah. It's interesting how those kinds of jokes always end up being the only thing that can be universal, which is just, like, weird non sequiturs.
Right. Yeah. Well, Michael, it has been wonderful having you.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Where can people find you and follow you?
Oh, boy. Well, since the Cracked Diaspora, myself and a lot of our mutual buddies have been trying to start up our own new things, and our new thing is called Small Beans. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/smallbeans, or just go to iTunes or Stitcher and look for the Small Beans feed. We're mainly releasing podcasts now because we're just getting rolling, but if you were a fan of our previous work, we plan to be rolling out the kinds of sketches you would have seen at Cracked, and just continuing to fight the good fight with no corporate overlords, which we're excited about.
Personally, not a fan. No.
Yeah. All right.
No, it's wonderful. It's everything I loved about you guys at Cracked. And
yesterday we just dropped
just you guys doing your thing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. We just dropped a really good interview with Soren Bowie yesterday. But you can hear about what he's doing over at American Dad and what a horrible burden it is for him to have had children.
Oh, no. Miles, where can people find you and follow you?
You can find me and follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And, you know, a shout out to all the salty Canadian listeners who are like, don't be slagging off the Canadian Olympic team. Look, I love y'all up there.
Yeah.
So, look.
We're sorry.
Yeah, but
we're sorry. And
sorry.
I talked about how people ice skate to work in one of your towns, and how magical that is. So, you know, you're coming out ahead in my book.
When the first time a friend told me who grew up somewhere cold, they were like, oh, yeah, in the winter we would ice skate to school because the river went from our house to school.
Right.
I'm like, you grew up in a goddamn fantasy world.
Right,
that's like
exactly.
A Dickens postcard or something.
Right. Yeah. And we'd love for you guys to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
And Miles, I think we have a review to share with
us. Yes,
our
we do.
Listeners.
The title, Intelligent and Fun, from Irate Samurai with the 5-star. Bless you, fam. I enjoy getting a daily update on the world from Jack and Miles' humorous perspective, and their guests are great.
Aww.
And I get to hear music I would never hear, which is sometimes good, just sometimes. Thanks, boys. So, all right.
Wow.
All right, Irate Samurai. I can tell you're not totally supportive samurai. You're a little irate. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But we appreciate the review.
I don't even blow up the spot. You know, that's actually Peter Travers of the Rolling Stones.
Oh,
Irate
really?
Samurai.
Yeah, that's true. Irate. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, go back to rating samurai.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So, Miles, speaking of our spotty music taste, do you have a song?
Oh, yes. I have a song because, you know, a lot of people were fan of the Spotify ad read where I was rapping like this, hipping and a hopping. Well, you know, a real legend of MCing and the hip-hop world in general, Lovebug Starsky, he passed away last week. You might have heard the name if you remember Juicy, but Notorious B.I.G. says peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kick Capri, Funk Master Flex, Lovebug Starsky. I want to play people one of his great tracks, You've Gotta Believe. You know, and it's where this guy was one of the forefathers of hip-hop. He was MCing in the late 70s and kind of didn't get his shine like how Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five did. But again, it's important. Learn your history. Rest in peace to Lovebug Starsky.
And also, like, a lot of the music from that era, like, the rapping kind of gets in the way of my enjoyment. It's, like, too nursery rhyme and, like, the focus is too much on that. But, like, this actually sounds dope.
Yeah, it's kind of funky. And if you watch the video, I realize I was born in the wrong era. Like, I wish I was MCing in the early 80s, like, while everybody was, like, just flying off their face on cocaine, like, wearing crazy outfits. But anyway, if anyone has a time travel machine, hit me up because I will go there.
And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then. You gotta believe.
Shake it!
Looks like there's no other way. Just remember these words I say.
You got